What's up, party people in the place to be? This is Kosha Dills, and I am here with another episode of Hustle Beach, Hustle Beach episode 12, where we try to figure out the hustle behind the muscle and take it all the way back to the first beaches you went to. And we have here Matt Barr all the way from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. What's up, man?
Hello. Hi, everybody. Hello, Kosha. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, cool, man. Wait, are you from Philly? Is that like, is that the spot?
No, I'm originally from Iowa City, Iowa. The mecca of Jewish educators and rappers.
Yeah. Actually, what is it? The area code's 319? Is that it?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
That's impressive, Kosha.
Iowa Hawkeyes. I was a wrestler, you know, my whole life. So we were all up on Dan Gable.
And, yeah. Growing up, just it was a guaranteed we were a national champion.
Yep,
like 17 years in a row or something like that.
It's pretty epic, man. You guys come from the most legendary wrestling town in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wait, so how did you? So you're a rapper, but you're kind of like in this education world, and I always thought it was like weird how that sort of meshed together. So like, right. how did it start out? Like, what was your first hustle in Iowa? Where you're at now, in comparison to where you're at now, you know?
Say again.
In comparison to where you're at now, like, what was the first thing that kind of set it off in Iowa?
Well, when I first started playing music for revenue was in college. I went to WashU in St. Louis, and that's where I started learning how to play guitar and writing guitar songs. So my first, like, I don't know, 6-7 years of my career, I was mainly a singer-songwriter, folk singer, who rapped. I loved rap, but it was more of like, and then of kind of something that I would get to 1 out of 8 songs as part of a folk song, you know, as more of a trick. And so my first hustle in music was, I remember I got paid $500, like my for a show. I opened for Outkast. I won a battle in the bands with guitar, you know, and getting $500 was like wow, this is a chunk of change. And it was, you know, 17 years ago,
yeah,
pre-corona economy. I was doing, the folk music. I was signed to a label writing songs.
And how was that opening up as a folk singer for Outkast?
Well, I won the battle of the bands and that was the reward. And then I basically equipped myself with 4 other band members to make it like a legit show. So I kind of got the best musicians at my college to kind of do to make rockify or jamify my songs.
Right.
To make it make sense, because, you know, there's like 4,000 people there and it was, but it went well, but you know, it was one of those, I remember it was like 45 minutes before I was on, and it was like, you know, 1,000 some already in the crowd. And it started to kind of rain. I remember wishing, like, in my being like, I hope it rains out, because I was so nervous. You know,
right,
what I mean?
Like,
oh, I hope it's over. I hope it rains out. Like, because I was so scared. But then it didn't rain out. And then, of course, it was, you know, it went well. It was fun. It was just like one of the great, you know, I've been bragging about it since. It's unfortunately, yeah. So, but then, so then when I came back to Iowa City, basically I worked at an alternative high school as like a teacher assistant, lunch lady dude was my nickname. And so they gave me a lot of opportunities to use my songwriting skills for like alternative educational methods with these kind of, they're looking for, it's alternative education. So they're looking for different ways to reach these kids. So they would utilize my songwriting capabilities. While there, I ended up writing a number of hooks for a group called Renaissance, which was some MCs from that all ended up in Iowa City or the Iowa City area. But one was from Detroit, one was from Chicago, one was from New York, and then the producer from LA. And the producer I was friends with since high school, and so he had me write some hooks for Renaissance, and then we did a couple shows together, and then they would like let me have 16 bars.
Yeah,
you know, like
I know that's and, life familiar,
right? And that was when, and, you know, and I was the only white guy on stage for like a 45-minute show, and I don't dance well, so I'm just sitting there awkward on stage for like 30 minutes, and then I come on for my like little, you know, 16 bars, and it was a hot spotlight, and you know, at that point on, I knew I had to get better and better and better. And
it's
so
it's funny that you said that you played for $500 opening for Outkast, because I also 15 like years ago, like I opened up for 112, and
right.
And I also got like 500 from the college, but I got like booed off stage. It was like really bad, and you know, they were like, we want 112. And like 112 was selling Polaroids for like $25 after the show. And just people were lining up and they were just racking in 20 like Polaroids.
Wow.
I mean, you got to think like, you know, digital cameras came out, but like MySpace had just come out at this point.
Yeah, that's, I mean, what do you do with the, like in terms of the change of the whole hustle? Like, I mean, albums used to be such a big part of my revenue, not a big part, but it was a legitimate revenue stream. And now, like, just because it's like, you know, you don't have that thing where like, I'm at a show, I like it here, I will buy your album for $15. But now it's like, oh, nobody has CDs anymore. So they have to go home and go through the process of like actually, you know, committing to buying it. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. What is, do you have any secret?
I mean, like, you know, the stuff after that, you know, back then I didn't have merch, but you know, CDs, and then it was, you know, vinyl is a big thing. You know, people really like vinyl, you know, like the five people at the show who have who buy vinyl, like they'll buy your vinyl.
Interesting. Yeah. Right.
And they'll buy it for, you know, at least $20 to $30, you know, $20 to $30. And you know, you could throw in the CD as like an extra thing. But like there, to some level there, I still believe that like if you have 1,000 CDs, you know, you'll get rid of them at some point, and it's worth it to just get like 1,000, you know, at a time.
You think so? Yeah, I hear that.
I mean, because
I hope so.
If you get 500, it's like only $200 less. It's just like just whatever, you know, it's worth getting the other piece. But yeah, I'm really interested at how you could, you know, Iowa, I've always been really good in the Midwest, like just in general, just playing at those places, you know, but I'm interested to how you shifted over from opening from Outkast to Jewish education, and you know, like how did you go from opening for Outkast to rapping about Passover? You know, what's the trick,
and,
buddy?
You know? Right.
But go into that, well, because I'm like, I don't know, that's what's really great. You've done really well in that space.
Yeah, it kind of combined, you know, my passions of learning and teaching and songwriting, and basically I ended up being with that group Renaissance for about 4 years, touring with them and becoming like one of the main MCs. And really, you know, like that was like my, you know, 4 years of college and hip hop, like just every, you know, we'd meet once a week and write 16 bars together, kind of just, it was really took it very, very serious. And through that process, then I came out with an album that was folk rap. So I was kind of doing folk rap and with Renaissance. But I got turned on to Judaism from a Birthright Leave Note trip. And I was a philosophy
major. Was that your first Birthright trip?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, because like Leave Note, I was like, I don't know. It sounds like it could be, you know, a special Birthright. But it was your first one.
It was my first one, yeah.
What year, and, what year were you?
2007.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, while there, I got turned on to the Beit Midrash. In Judaism, there's two houses, basically. There's the Beit Knesset, the house of assembly or the house of worship, like where you go to pray. And then the other half of Judaism, which I didn't know because it's kind of particular to Judaism, is the house of study, the Beit Midrash. And I would, you know, this like collection of 3,000 years of wisdom and intergenerational conversations about meaningful, important things. And being a philosophy major, I never knew that was what Judaism was. I grew up in Iowa City. Iowa is one of the very few Jews. And so once I got turned on to that, I started studying it more, getting more into it. And then I went to I moved to New York because basically I was like, a lot of the reason why I was in Iowa City still was because my dad has MS. And so I went back there to help him. And then eventually I left to go to grad school at JTS to kind of pursue this passion in Judaism.
Jewish Theological Seminary.
Right? Yeah, Jewish Theological Seminary. Also just to get to New York. I went there. I dropped out after a semester because it was just very dry. But I was teaching Hebrew school, three different Hebrew schools, and like I was an average Hebrew school teacher until I wrote a rap about Passover as like the foundation of my lesson plan. And then all of a sudden I was a great Hebrew school teacher. So it made my job a lot easier when I started this with like a serious rap and kind of had the class be sorted out and kind of organized by the rap lyrics. And the kids really responded to it. And then it got some play and some legs. And then I went to a social incubator in Jerusalem for like, you know, new ideas and that kind of thing.
Cool.
And for 6 weeks, it was present tense. Jonah, can you take that out? Because I can't have another thing playing here. Can you go over with Jonah and Micah?
This is a cue in of his child.
Oh, thanks.
Just a cue of the kid.
Yeah.
We go completely unedited on the podcast, so Jonah just got just a good shout
word.
Out. Yeah.
Jonah, say hi. You made it on the podcast. when I was there, you know, because you know, it's not either you blow up, and even if you blow up, then it might be a quick descent, quick fall, and this like combined three things that I was exceptional at relative to my other talents. You know what I mean?
Right.
I love learning. I love Judaism. I love teaching, and I like kids, and I also like, I love rap, and I really think that rap has just so many advantages pedagogically, educationally.
What does that word mean, pedagogically? What?
Like the science of education.
Okay.
So, I mean, just by the, you know, you could say more words in one rap than you can in an album of any other genre.
You could.
And just, gotta be quiet, Jonah. And so the more I was trying to teach Judaism with hip hop, the more I really saw like hip hop, the overlap between just this obsession with the word, you know, this obsession with flipping words and seeing so many things in one word or one bar or one line. And then like, you know, comparing chavruta, like study buddies or, you know, which is like how you learn in Judaism, you learn with somebody else, but they also are not only like your buddy, they're also your inquisitor. So it's kind of like a battle rap when you're learning in Judaism. So all these things added up to really find a really enjoyable, interesting space for me to set a career path, Bible raps, you know, teaching Judaism and with hip hop, be it my raps or taking a studio, like a portable studio to a camp or a Hebrew school and teaching them, doing some text learning, and then having the kids write their own raps, make their own kind of rap with me as a guide. And all that added up to a really fun career that's taken me, you know, all over the world. I met, you know, meet really groovy people like yourself. So, you know, it's been real fortunate niche. Like, it's so niche. Like, you know, like my last album was called Best Bible Rapper Alive, you know. And the first track, Elijah, the prophet Elijah, like, humbles me. He's like, your yarmulke implores me to please rap for ye. I am Elijah. There isn't much higher. Matt Fire, bringer, I harbinger of messiahs. But I'm like, but I say like, humbled, I mumbled. What? Elijah says, I heard you think you're the best Bible rapper alive. And I go, well, there's less than five. You know, I mumbled, well, there's less than five. Like, I'm not really, really bragging too hard when there's like maybe one or two other people would be.
It's so funny. I have a t-shirt that says number one Jewish rapper in Koreatown. And
exactly right.
And like, yeah, the idea is you know, I always go back to the methodology of the movie A League of Their Own, where they had this one thing, it was like, hit them where they ain't, hit them where they ain't. That's
right.
And
right.
You just said, this is like wide open. Why don't I enter into this field of things where it's wide open and people right. could say, whoa, this is like a really cool opportunity to just be here. And I sort of fell into that thing too. It's like, oh yeah, Kosher Dills. Okay, what? Jewish rap. Is it really Jewish rap? No, the name is Jewish, so it must be Jewish then, right? It's like right. kosher, so isn't that like the food is Jewish, you know? Or, you know.
Right, right.
So whenever I would see Bible, I feel like you've definitely, I mean, you're like, and I would go really into like Jewish rap, but it's cool that you opening up for Outkast and stuff like, I mean, that's credibility, you know what I mean? Like it's, you're yeah, coming from I mean, a real school of rap and like you ended up in this thing and you're like, it's not what I, you know, it's not what I dreamed when I started rapping, right? We dreamed of like, oh, I want to open for Outkast and this. And dude, I opened for Big Boy the other year, and then the year after he played the Super Bowl, and I'm like, ah,
wow,
look at that!
Man. Well, hey, man,
look at
you
that!
Had, you, had
you know,
Super
I
Bowl
was,
and
I had a Super Bowl commercial, yeah, yeah. But you're like, dude, I'm right there,
right?
And
right.
but this Jewish thing, like, saves us, you know? It's just this odd, and not just saying it saves us. I mean, we contribute to it, but this right. it's a world that's really interesting because it doesn't exist within other cultures. I guess, though, like, there's a lot of Christian rap. I mean, Christian rap has its own Billboard yes. charts. I mean, Christian country
right.
music. I mean, they have their own radio stations. It's like
right.
when you drive through Iowa and the panhandle of, like,
yeah.
the Midwest, you could really jam out to some Christian music.
Yeah, yeah. There's – no, but, I mean, when I first – I mean, part of the motivation was not necessarily, like – there is, like, hit them where they ain't. But it was also, like, when I saw – Judaism being taught or like explicitly represented in rap, it was always, except few exceptions, but it was almost always like parody and kind of surface of like both cultures. It was usually someone, a Jewish educator who was trying to rap versus like when I fell into it as a rapper who learned to become a Jewish educator. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
That's the big difference.
That's
you know.
A big difference, yeah. Because the other people are like, oh, I'll do, I'm a teacher and I'll do this rap. I've explored rap, the idea of rapping.
Right.
But, and I'm like, and I'm all for it. I feel like hip hop has a place in so much. And the more those educators try, and then they
right.
hear a real rapper rap that's
right.
actually been rapping for over 15 to 20 years, you know, like their whole
right.
life, like us.
Right.
Then they'll be like, wow, well, you actually have to be really, really, really good to like really, you know, to actually have a lot of courage. So you like went into a field that no one's ever gone into this field before. And
yeah,
I'm going to make it into my own field.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I saw just how effective it was in Hebrew school. And, you know, Jews are so concerned with education because it's like education is how you transmit tradition. And right now there's just nothing, there's just not many things that are working that are getting the next generation interested in some kind of authentic Jewish identification.
How did it work for you in Birthright? You said you went on Birthright and you were like, all right, I'm on Birthright, this is what I'm going to do.
Well, I was on Birthright and it was just a very, I have a song about it, about when I basically danced with the Shekhinah, the feminine manifestation of God on earth. But essentially, you know, there's some real rebbes there.
Just for people that don't know what Shekhinah is, could you just explore, like, what's that word mean?
It's a name for God, but like basically, and it's a feminine name. You know, there's no gender.
God is a woman.
Yeah, but it basically, it's the name you use for God when you like are experiencing God on earth a little bit, or you're experiencing the holy. You're experiencing the Shekhinah. It was a week of just really, really deep conversations with really, really couple of really deep human beings, that just, yeah, I really fell in love with Jewish thought, and then I went to Pardes in Jerusalem and studied for 2 years.
Damn.
And basically, yeah, and the rabbis there, you know, supported my. I think they saw that I had a serious talent in the songwriting, and that I wasn't. They appreciated that I was like it was sophisticated, my raps about the Torah stories, versus like.
Basic
parody and kind of like making a joke out of it,
right?
So they really supported me.
So let's switch. Well, you know the thing about parody is it's. I mean, Jews are really good at comedy. You know, I guess like just in general, we are all really good and the parody stuff is just. It's so mainstream, you know. Like everyone needs a good parody rap. I mean, I'm sure they're gonna come for yeah. Passover, and we'll switch in over because it's about to be Passover when we upload this.
Right.
Like. Why did Jews choose parodies? I feel like, didn't we also like write the Christmas song? I feel like we're good songwriters yeah. in general.
Right. And, yeah.
And, I don't know, maybe you could elaborate.
No. Yeah. I hear you. I mean, there's a real nice, notable, like authentic streak in hip hop of Jews and Judaism, you know, like from the get, you know, with Rick Rubin. Mm-hmm. And you know the Beastie Boys and MC Search, you know, who so like all the way up to, you know, Mac Miller and Drake, but Kosha Dills, but at this, I don't know, at the same time, yeah, we really do love like taking the hot commercial pop thing and
we
then like putting our words for our Jewish culture to it, and we really gravitate towards that. But to me it drives me crazy. You know, I just can't stand it.
I get it.
I have a song called Parodies about parodies. We got Big Daddy Kane and Abel Moses Def, Fresh Prince of Bear Sheva. We got Mem the Mem. We got Gangstar. We got Gangstar. Judeo Fiasco, Will I Am That I Am, out, you know, Outlast Yo, Kid Yidden Play, Talmudia Mob, Juicy, Brisk Cross, SNOOD-D Sim Shady, and the Mensch Mob, Levy D and the Goys, you know, I just
wow,
go on and on.
Wow, that's so complex for anyone to really, that's like such a niche crowd, because you're talking about Lynch Mob and Eminem, and you're
yeah.
talking about Big Daddy Kane and Mos Def, and
yeah,
and
right.
people are like, who are those? Who are they? Like, most people don't
right.
even know who they are, you know what I mean? And that's,
right,
like, really
right.
going in.
Rick Rosh Hashanah. You know, it goes on and on. But the chorus is, please, parodies, parodies. I'm about to go nuts. Please, parodies.
Oh, wow, okay,
parodies.
Wow, that's great. That, dude,
I'm
that's
about to go nuts. You know.
That's amazing.
And,
that's actually, I want to hear that.
So, it's mixed, so it's actually parodies. And then Nuts comes up after it.
Could you send me that song? So maybe
yeah,
I could put
sure.
some of it in this podcast.
Right,
so let's switch over to, so Passover's coming up, and you have the hip-hop Haggadah.
Word.
Hip-hop Haggadahs.
Yes. The hip-hop Haggadah, which is like a bunch of, the Haggadah is kind of what you use when you do the Seder, which is how you celebrate Passover. Everybody gets around a table and you
get wine.
This
will be us, the Seder, right here.
Right. And one of the things you do is you like re-experience the Exodus, and it's supposed to be very playful, and it's really designed for kids. You know, like when kids say a good, just would say kids, like in the Talmud, it's like if the kid says a good question or a question, you throw a piece of candy at him. Like, and it's like, it doesn't, you don't give it to him, you throw it at him. It's supposed to be like kind of crazy and fun. You're supposed to lean like you're
oh, yeah.
an aristocrat.
Like, cause
and,
you're,
you know,
cause you're now out of slavery. So you're just chilling.
Exactly. So it's a really groovy,
that.
It's a really fun, adventurous, ceremony that also incorporates, new, things, and so we're making a hip-hop Haggadah that expands each year, and this one has 5 activities, and we're about to actually release with you, with Kosha Dills, Mr. E, Tex Rich Ali, this track that's from the hip-hop Haggadah that, you know, basically it's like every generation must look upon themselves as if they left Egypt with everybody else, And then I go around and ask these four rappers, like, tell me, where were you when there arose a new pharaoh limiting our rights? Were you really scared, yo? And then the rapper raps, you know, what it was like for them when pharaoh said, you can't, you know, hey, you Israelites, you can't do, you know, Shabbat anymore, and you have a curfew. And then, like, and I ask where, and so I go through Exodus asking questions, and then the rapper has to, like, imagine what it was like being there in Exodus. And that's the whole, that's what the rabbis say the point of the Seder is to somehow re-experience Exodus a little bit. And so this year it has, it's going to be bigger. We're putting out a whole, at hiphopchag.com. I bought that website, and I'll have, that'll be the first one that'll be up there. Will be like a whole, you can go through the whole Seder, via raps and via rap activities. And it really works well for digital Seders, which is going to be what we're going to be doing this year. So
next week. When is it? The 7th and the 8th are the first Seders?
Exactly.
I think we should just make every day a Seder. Just a little Seder, you know? I just figured, because everyone's, people are going to miss it. Everyone's blending the days in and out, you know?
Yeah. And weekends are, like, for me, weekends are no different than weekdays. Like, order is being, also, it, Seder does, means order, you know, I mean.
Yeah, let's Seder, yeah.
Right, so the Seder is, like, you're trying to put these things in order, but I feel like with this whole, like, homestay, you know, coronavirus lockdown, like, everything is dissolving into, you know, there's no order to anything. I don't know what day it is sometimes.
Today's Thursday.
Right.
Today's Thursday. Right. I don't always know what day everything is. Even your kid in the background, he's losing it. He's like, what day is it?
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to keep some kind of uniformity of schedule and life, but, you know... But it's, the good thing about these days is, speaking of hustle, it's like, you know, when there was the Black Plague in London in 1666, that's when Newton got out of there and had his miracle year, which basically changed, you know, the changed science, which basically brought upon the dawn of modern science with his miracle year of, like, figuring out the three laws of physics. And so what's cool about, not cool, but, you know, what I've embraced is being home, not gigging, not doing all the work that's involved with gigging and all that. Like, the only thing to do in order to kind of keep it moving is to create, you know, create media, create music. And so I've really tried to, you know, this is kind of, I think, a space, a time for, especially for an organization, like, just with the economy stopping and when you're dependent on gatherings, try to figure out how to get revenue streams when gatherings aren't happening for another 6 months, maybe, and then we'll be kind of like 50, no more than 50 plus for 6 months, you know, who knows?
Right.
Like,
it's going to be good. It's going to be good for small shows, I think. And we could do shows of 30 people, but I don't even think people will want to be around. That's the thing. I don't, it'll be hard to even get that in, you know, in certain situations. But I'm interested. So what is your hustle now with all, you know, now that we are in our plague, what is the hustle of Bible raps? I mean, how are you stepping to people? So, what does that entail just for somebody that's used to going into rooms?
Right.
Because for you to make the magic happen, it's better if you're in the room, right? As an educator.
Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. It's very hard to recreate, but now, you know, we have some good experience of creating online curriculum. Like, we put out a Musar mixtape. Bible Raps co-founded an organization with a guy named Tex Rich Ali and Rabbi Adam called Rappers and Rabbis. And so we, you know, it's just like MCs or rabbis interested in the Jewish future, kind of trying to work together. And so that's, with them, we have experience creating, like, digital curriculum. So now the hustle will be, like, definitely digital curriculum for education, because people are looking for stuff to entertain their children and not just have Hebrew school be done, you know? So, you know, I'll be putting out material, for this Hip Hop Haggadah Yada, and then I put out the next thing is I'm putting out the Notorious, the Octogenarian, Oratorious, Contrarian, Meritorious, Very Glorious, Notorious, RBG mixtape.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, because she's like the meme. She became like the meme of being compared to the Biggie Smalls, like the Notorious RBG.
Right.
Became her nickname. So like it became as like someone's gonna have to do, you know, like Alexander Hamilton of RBG. You know what I mean?
And you've been full time Bible raps for how long?
12 years, 11 years, almost 12. Yeah.
What, and what made you, what were you doing before you made the jump? And you're like, this is what I'm doing. I'm just going to start hitting up every synagogue in the entire universe.
Right. I was, you know, I was with Renaissance and a folk singer in Iowa City, and then moved out to New York City, and it quickly, like, knew that wasn't for me. But
did you love living in New York City, though? Did you feel like the hip hop spirit?
No, man, it broke me. It was too hard for me.
It was.
I mean, like, I'd work just to, like, you know, I'd work to, you know, 5 days a week just to, like, live there, because that's where you're supposed to live if you're going to make it, you know. And then, like, I would be so beat, and, like, the idea of getting on the subway and traveling an hour and, like, having to go through 8 existential crises of whether you're going to give money to the crackhead or to the person who's just poor, and, you know, like, all these, and then, like, it being dirty and just...
It's tough.
It was not for me. I was just like, yeah, I'd make it out to like open mics like once a month, even though that's what I was doing there. Yeah, right. It was too much. So that's a hard town.
Let me ask you, before all this, like when you were getting ready, before you were even doing the hip hop, and were you selling anything when you were younger? Like I used to do door to door candy and stuff. Were you, your first thing did you remember selling anything when you were younger?
Right, that is a good question. Yeah, I mean, like, one day, yeah, at junior high, me and my buddy, like, we, I don't know if you remember, like, for school, sometimes you'd sell magazine subscriptions all around the neighborhood. So, like, we went all around the neighborhood, and we ended up winning a bunch of points, and we got, like, a limo, we got to, like, miss one class and a limo ride to McDonald's and back, and, like, I don't know, some random stuff.
You got a limo ride to McDonald's?
Yeah, during school.
That's amazing. What a flex.
Yeah, it was amazing.
What a flex.
Yeah.
You're like, dude, yeah. Everyone just hold up. Right? I'll be back in a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, and I
what
also,
a hustle,
like,
but the real hustle is those magazine subscriptions. We were subscribing to what magazines were they? Like Sports Illustrated? I remember that, and it was like,
yeah, it was a whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, people, you go, I just go around the neighborhoods and I'd be like, you can renew your subscription. And I'd be like, okay. So yeah, I mean, I was always different periods of selling. I mean, like, or just like scrounging. I remember being good at scrounging, you know, like for no better reason than just to say you scrounge $6.
It's amazing.
Yeah, no, I didn't really get, entrepreneurially, it took me a while to really figure it out, and I kind of was able to be like not the front person in the music business for a good 5-6 years to kind of soak up what the managers were doing. Then by the time I did Bible Raps, you know, I was older and kind of had some business acumen, and then I was fortunate to get some good mentors and you know, and have a good product in a place where they're really searching for something that can touch their kids and bring authentic Judaism as well.
So now that everything is closed, do you feel like, are you preparing like a new, like, okay, for two hours a day, I'm going to do outreach and just reach out to synagogues and stuff and be like, hey, are you guys doing any digital programming or could we assist you with anything?
No, yeah, I know. I'm still figuring it out. What I need to do first is I'm thinking maybe like webinars, like for example, the Ruth Bader Ginsburg album. When I put that out, there's 5 main songs about her. And I was thinking of like maybe doing a webinar of like, I have some pretty good friends who are like high powerful with, you know, high powered women who also could like speak, I think, intelligently about like being a woman from their perspective, and riff off one of the songs. So like doing like a webinar where like so-and-so from the New York Times or so-and-so from blah, 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 blah will, you know, teach about will teach about being a woman in this industry, or whatever, and base them off the Notorious RBG mixtape that, will be like intersected with the, with their teachings as like, you know, some that people can get on. Also Hip Hop Haggadah Seder, you know, I hope we can, you know, set up a number of those. That's something we'll talk about if we can,
yeah.
You know, there's no reason why you try to get, just make that, make, yeah, digital experiences, you know, that's got to be an offering. And I think there's a lot.
Got to be an offering now.
Yeah, exactly.
Post it. First thing is just post it. Yeah. So, so let everyone know where, you could, be found. What's your, shout out all your social media and stuff. And
word. So Bible Raps on Facebook, Bible Raps on Instagram, BibleRaps.com. And then the, if you want to check out some of the stuff that, and the, for rappers and rabbis, you know, that's kind of the new hustle, to be honest, because Bible Raps is like a for profit, like, I mean, it's a fiscally sponsored nonprofit, but all its revenue is from gigs.
Right.
Whereas not rappers and rabbis, has gotten some of basic, funding for like Jewish education on, with a bunch of hip hop, talent.
I feel like I've expressed rappers and rabbis in my normal day, like at conversations. So I really identify with the website.
No, exactly. I think that's kind of the thing to explore. Like if, you know, we can squad up and be like, look, let us take the lead in this and, you know, teach the youth now that we have to stay, you know, 6 feet away from them, we can, you know, like, we can create a bunch of dope media and that the kids will want to watch and whatever. So, you know, figuring out what that nonprofit hustle is, what people in, funding places are going to want to, like what they're going to be trying to, help in this new kind of economy. You know, I think they have some empathy for people like us who are like, everybody's screwed a little bit.
Yeah.
But you know, you're stuck here. You're supposed to be doing 40 shows and now it's zero. So it's like, or whatever. It's just like, you know,
I lost them all.
That's just brutal. Brutal. So there's people are sympathetic, but also, you know, can we be smart enough and can we kind of, what are they hoping will fill that void? Like, where people used to get together for Jewish experience, for Jewish, you know, loveliness, you know, are they going to want to invest in the digital equivalent? And so I hope, you know, me, you, and some of these rappers who are kind of in our little Jewish rap world can kind of like put it all together and be something that people would invest in, like for real, for real.
For real,
you
for
know,
real.
Like, okay, you know, yeah. You're going to be. So, but that's kind of the hustle now, one thing at a time.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm happy that you came on. This is the Hustle Beach Podcast. This is Matt Barr, Bible Raps, Rappers, and Rabbis. I'm going to put a little bit of the song after this so people could listen for Pesach. So happy Passover. And I will see you at the Seder. I also have Seder Stream. If you guys are interested in, I have a Facebook group called Seder Stream where you could see a bunch of streaming Seders. You could, if you enjoy this podcast, there's patreon.com/koshadills, patreon.com/koshadills, and Spotify. We have koshadills. I have a bunch of koshadillsworld.com. I have a bunch of districtlines.com/koshadills for the merch. And we hope you stay at home, stay far away from people, but physically distance, but don't socially distance. We have Zoom. We have Instagram, we got Twitter, we have Gmail chat, we have all kinds of ways to chat, and we have FaceTime. So this is amazing, dude. I'm happy we did this, and thanks for having me on the new song for right Passover. On. I'm looking forward to seeing the creation of the video. Thanks for having Jonah appear on the podcast as well. And this is Hustle Beach, everybody. Hustle Beach! Coach Adele, make sure you
there rose a new pharaoh, limiting our rights. Were you really scared, yo? Not yet, not yet. And now you're gonna rap.
Yeah. To keep it really real, yeah, I was pretty frightened. Wasn't fan of Pharaoh, no, he wasn't to my liking. Stripped us of our freedom, did the opposite of right thing. Jews were going under, first the thunder, then the lightning. Times were getting tough, I was feeling for my people. Suffering, enslaving, labor turned lethal. Back to answer question, yes, I was kind of scared, yo. But I held it down, stood my ground like a scarecrow. Had the heart and courage, but I had to use my brain, though. So I prayed to Hashem, Red Sea, open the lane, go.
Tell me how it felt when Pharaoh enslaved the Hebrews. Whips at our back till our souls began to bleed too. Not yet. Now, and now, now, wait.
Always tired and dealing with the master. Kinda hard to live life these days as a rapper. This is my exposure. Hard to separate the kids, educate the feet, hit the sand, move it with the hips. Running from the government, no time for hustling. The Pharaoh want me dead. He thinks my people well outnumber his. I haven't started struggling, already been a slave. Can't see the future next age. Each lash equal 10 plagues. Put some blood in the river with a couple boys. Can you afford these? Don't want the story to get spoiled. A slave by distraction, they don't want to see uprise. 10 plagues later, yo, watch what happened to those guys.
Yo. Tell me what you did when they were killing our firstborn. Babies dying, mamas crying, how'd you weather that storm? Not yet. Here you go.
We prayed for deliverance, asking for an end to this, searching for a purpose, knowing that we weren't meant for this. Singing every single note, casting every single vote, striking every single code. Pray with every bit of hope, protect the child as we were told us. In prophecy we behold it, become our liberation, exodus, movement with Moses. As our legacy teaches, leaving the Pharaoh speechless. God of Israel, release us, letting Shalom be our teacher. Letting Shalom be our teacher.
Go. Tell me what you saw when all the plagues came from God. Frogs and the locust, man, didn't it look odd? Not yet. One, two, here you go.
Red suds from the red blood of the Nile. People still going to the beach in straight denial. All the while, check the smiles. The wicked slave masters flip around into frowns with each coming disaster. I saw brown red blood filling up the well. Egyptians bout to live a living hell. Frogs and lice and locusts hopping. Baby, it ain't stopping. Got those balls popping. Hail with fire is raining on the windows. Darkness creeping. It ain't like the real blow. Death of the firstborn. Hebrews got protection. Lamb's blood on the door. Death angel takes direction.